Steering committee.
Yes.
Reconvened. We're back to being a garage band again.
We meant to do this a few days ago, and life got in the way. We had a cool experience.
We did. Recently. We had a great opportunity recently to the nice people at Polestar each brought over separately to each of their homes a Polestar 2 to drive.
What color was yours?
Mine was white.
Okay, mine was sort of an off-white, kind of a light Nardo gray, I want to say.
Okay, all right.
I don't know. It had a Washington State plate on it.
Mine did too, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah. You don't see a lot of fleets operating out of Washington State. Growing up in car and driver, I always like to have a New Jersey plate, right? The manufacturer, the Porsche plate, it was always New Jersey for some reason.
Well, no, like all the, I noticed this too, all the Subarus that come over.
Yeah.
Even the test cars that they're testing stuff out, they have Indiana plates.
Indiana, that's right, because they have a plant.
Yeah, they build they don't put all the cars.
Yeah, they don't bring WRX in Indiana, right?
No. The only two I know of are the Forester and the Outback.
Okay.
Super North America bread and butter. Maybe some of the Tribecas now, I don't know. But
talk about a car I don't even think about ever.
I know. Now it's the Ascent.
The Ascent, right. It just sort of looks like a bloated any other Subaru, but that's another story.
Yeah,
we drove the Polestar.
We're not here to talk about
it. So kind of cool. Subaru, just a little baseline here. The Polestar 2. And now, of course, the first question when I said, oh, I get to drive a Polestar. Everyone said, oh, is it the Polestar 1? And I had to say, no, it's the Polestar 2, which is very cool. The distinction is the Polestar 1 is the two-door supercar, I guess you could call it. It's $160,000. I mean, it's priced like an exotic. It looks like it was kind of like a
moonshot sort of like technical example.
It's a halo car, so, I guess, right? Yeah. But what we drove was the Polestar 2, which is also very cool because I haven't seen one on the road, and I don't think you had either. Nope. Saw my first Mach-E today. We can come back to that.
Those are starting to hit the roads.
But the Polestar 2. So in a nutshell, it is a $60,000, 400 horsepower. All-wheel drive, Volvo, basically, but it's branded as Polestar, so it's a little different. The model we drove, I think, or at least the one I drove, was the, I think they were referring to as the vegan model or the natural model or something, where everything was, it was all natural materials inside, so it was sort of this weird synthetic cloth seat.
Vegan cloth.
Apparently, they weave the fabric to size, which is interesting, so there's no excess, which is kind of cool. But apparently this is the only one they have out right now as far as the Polestar 2 goes. I had a lovely Polestar representative by the name of Ashley, who may be listening now. Hey, Ashley, if you're listening. She hinted at maybe something coming out down the road that was at a lower price point. But so for $60,000, so you've got to sort of view this or talk about this through this lens of $60,000, which is right at about where a nicely equipped, I think, Model 3, would that be the performance model? You've got to think about, too, there's a government, $8,000-$9,000 rebate, so that's the price down.
Yeah, there's you have access to, I want to say, $4,000 or $5,000 from the federal government, potentially another $2,000 to $3,000 from our state government here in Colorado.
That
makes a big difference. You get a smaller discount, but you do get a discount if you were to lease one of these as well from the state.
Too many numbers. This is why I've avoided electric cars until now.
You have to figure out all the things you have to figure out about your car, and then you also have to go talk to your accountant and find out. But it's one thing, though, that is available to you on an electric car that's not available on any gas-powered car. So you have that.
But that's where this car plays, right?
Yeah.
And
that's the sandbox it's in.
You know what? The Model 3 theoretically starts at $35,000, but, most of the ones you see, I think, are the dual motor. And this, I think, is a competitor.
If it's similarly equipped where it's two motors and all-wheel drive like this one, then you're in $60,000 really easy.
This is a fast car. 400 horsepower, I think, is what it is. And it is 0 to 60, I've seen, between 4 and about 4.4. Quarter mile, I think, in 12.6 seconds. So at least in a straight line, the numbers are right there with my previous Cayman that I had. This is a pretty fast car. you know, is it Tesla Model S ludicrous mode fast? No. But, you know, especially compared to some of the other electric cars that are coming out now, the Volkswagen ID.4, you know, that are sort of a more conventional 7-8 seconds to 60. This is a quick car, and it felt like a quick car. So
did you get to, I took it, I was able to take it out on the highway, like for, again,
yeah, we just
like
took it out to 25 here, and
it was fast, and yet at the same time, just like, you know, I mean, just smooth. I mean, it's just,
yeah, it's a great,
the way it just like delivered that power.
Well, you know, yeah, everyone always talks about these cars that instant torque, that, you know, we don't have to shift, you know, there's nothing, you know, the car doesn't have to shift, you know. Most electric cars are one speed, you know. I think the Taycan is a two speed, but you've got to be doing about 120 or something before you get into that second gear. Mm-hmm. What a great car to like shuttle around town in, and you know, and I've heard Matt Farah talk about it too, how you can, you know, as he would say, mob an electric car, and you know, no one even gives you a second glance
because there's
no noise, there's no, you know,
You're sneaky, you're kind of a sneaky.
Yeah, you can get into trouble with this car.
Yeah.
This is the first time I've driven an electric car, mm-hmm. and I think it was your time too. And mm-hmm. we've just never, you know, I don't know. Just I've been offered, never really cared to, and I was never really interested. I'm so glad I did. This was a great sort of place to start. I think.
Well, yeah. That's what I think too. I mean, I was excited when this opportunity came to us, because that Polestar 1 is so interesting.
Yeah,
it's such a great looking car.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, as you alluded to,
it looks quickly, like nothing else. Yeah.
So Polestar is a joint venture, really. It's between Geely and Volvo, but Geely owns Volvo,
right?
But it's So what they're doing in this case is it's the Swedish engineers and designers,
uh-huh.
and then assembled in China.
Yeah,
but it's, you know, they're right. But it's the idea is that this will be a brand that would sit sort of above Volvo in terms of like prestige and be all electric.
So. Yeah, and I do like that it is really under the radar. I mean, I kind of wonder if you're driving one of these things around and you get a parking ticket, would they even know what to call it? I mean, it doesn't say Polestar.
Yeah, on the outside. I think it just has this sort
of star. It's like they took one of the stars from the Subaru logo and put it on the back. But Polestar was, at least for a while, sort of Volvo's performance division.
I think they were a race team at one point, and they got bought out. They were brought in house for Volvo, and that kind of became their quote unquote M division.
For a couple of years at least, right?
Great,
little C30,
these hot little
Polestar,
hot little sort of like, you know, performance models built off of them.
But this now,
now they're just
denotes electric,
exactly, and they're moving it into that market. And yeah, I would say, let's start with looks right off the bat.
Yeah, I love the way it looks.
Yeah, it's really well designed.
Yeah.
It borrows heavily, I think, from the current sort of Volvo design language.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
We've said on this podcast so many times, we think Volvo might have the best overall design, a lineup of all their cars.
It operates sort of in a universe of its own, right? Like, it's a nice car. You don't feel like a jerk driving around. I mean, this very much borrows from that design language. We were talking before we came on, Volvo has the XC40, they call it the Recharge.
Yeah.
Mechanically, I think it's identical or almost identical to this Polestar 2. I think the biggest difference is the XC40 is more of an SUV. The Polestar 2 is a little more like a tall sedan or a tall hatchback.
Yeah, and I was going to get to that in a sec. I wanted to talk, I guess, go a little bit more into like what I liked.
Yeah.
I mean, so it had great presence, you know, I chatted with my representative was Jorge. So shout out to Jorge. Hopefully he's listening too.
Yeah, Jorge, we want to drive more of these. So.
Yeah, we'd love to drive more of these. It had like, you know, as he pulled in, like, you know, you could even tell, like, as people were driving by and walking around in the neighborhood, people were like stopping to check it out and look at it. The interior is gorgeous. I love the material choices on the inside.
And you, again, just to confirm, you drove the same one I did that didn't, you know, that had the natural finishes. And
it didn't have leather. It had the same. It had this really, and I prefer at like sort of a cloth-like material.
Yeah,
and this had
too,
a really
lot of
high-class, but everything you touched was very very, you know,
when you don't have the
quality.
Well, we don't have the traditional signifiers of a luxury car. Well, we've talked about this before, right? You know, an S-Class now versus an S-Class 20 years ago, what signified luxury then, you know, versus what signifies luxury now. And when you take away the leather, when you take away the wood and the, you know, whatever, how do you make a car seem like a luxury car without those things? But yet they seem to pull it off. I was really impressed.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right because, I mean, now, the amount of tech that's in a basic Hyundai,
yeah,
you know, is now makes that a more comfortable space than a 600 Grosso from the 60s. So I think the thing to focus on, and I think these guys with the Volvo products and the Polestar products nail it well, it's just a very like serene, high quality space design. Like the vents all look like they're really nice. Yeah. It's that nice
minimalist
sort of like design, and then you're really just sort of like surrounded by all that.
Well,
and
maybe we're coming back sort of full circle to sort of what luxury cars used to be. Luxury cars were not performance cars necessarily, you know, when we were kids or whatever.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the big signifier of luxury became the technology, right? And that's why, you know, these cars are on the cutting edge of technology, just don't hold their value, right? Because they sort of throw everything in that basket.
Yeah.
Well, to your point, now when every Hyundai and Volkswagen has that same technology, how do you then again differentiate yourself?
Yeah, how do you elevate it? I mean, I think one thing they think is that if they throw 400 horsepower at it, you'll feel like you have, you know, something. But that's
legitimately a quick car by anyone's standards. Yeah.
But I think Volvo does a better job than anyone of almost anyone, anything I can think of just like you get in and you feel like you are in a nice object. Mm-hmm. It is a nice place to sit. It is like as opposed to getting a McMansion, you know, you are getting an architect design house.
Right.
So it's every little detail, the things you don't even think about is all just perfect. Yeah. So,
I feel like they're sort of taking that they're playing in that space where BMW and Mercedes used to, where they used to sort of be a little quirky. Not everyone had them. Now they're a commodity. I just watched Doug DeMuro's M3 review. He liked the car dynamically, liked it a lot. He drove the stick. But good God, those giant nostrils. And even in the inside, I don't need disco lights, you know, up and down the dash. And I don't need mood lighting. I don't need, you know, I don't need a digital dash, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I guess the Polestar has that. But it's just a no bullshit car. And I guess that's what appealed to me.
Well, and what we should be clear about is that from what I understood, and Jorge took me through all the features, it has, you know, technology on it.
Absolutely,
to the nines. I mean, it has everything you want. It all runs mostly through this one, sort of, I would say iPad, you know, size.
Yeah, well integrated. Screen,
well integrated into the cockpit, but everything looks just lots of good information on the instrument cluster on the binnacle there. It has everything you need, but I feel like you could turn a lot of that off and just sort of focus on the driving a little bit, which was nice.
And one of the things I think that this sort of got right for me was, you know, everyone talks about how there's sort of two paths you can take with electric cars, right? You want to make it scream, hey, I'm an electric car, and you want everything about it to be different and high tech and sort of, you know, blingy, you know. And then other manufacturers are taking this, like the new ID4, the new Volkswagen, where it's, this could be an internal combustion car, you know, but it just happens to be, you know, so it doesn't remind you every time you turn around that this is something different and unique. You get behind the wheel of a Tesla, and, you know, it's just inherently different. This is more like a real car.
This seems like you're right, because the Teslas are almost just like their own thing. And they have done, I mean, as a company, though, they've really done.
Well, it is a cult, Doug, we've talked about
it. It is a cult, that's true. Yeah, I'm sorry, it's not a car company, it's a cult. But they've challenged it and they've pushed, and they've definitely, and coming from a blank slate, I guess they felt like they had that freedom to do that. They to really bring that sort of disruptor mentality from tech into the auto industry, and they've absolutely done that. But like, you know, driving on the Polestar, though, I just felt like I was driving I was driving with all the benefits that this company has of actually building cars and all the things that entails, but with almost all the benefits of having electric. So,
you know, and let's be clear. I mean, I think the Polestar 1 is sort of an object, you know, unto itself but this really, again, shares a lot of the mechanicals of, you know, this XC40 recharge, you know, but so this isn't, you know, this isn't like its own thing. This isn't, I mean, there's a lot of borrowed everything in this car.
Yeah. And that's probably why they're able to bring it in at about 60,000. Yeah, so, yeah. It seems well equipped even at the lower range.
Yeah, there was nothing.
And, you know, even I think you get a couple options in 61,000. So, one thing I will say, so I love the design of it. I love the lines of it on the exterior. The one thing, though, that bothers me, and you mentioned a little bit, though, is that I just rather see it as a traditional lower sedan, though. I don't. That's. I feel like I'm distracted a little bit by the fact that it's almost like a crossover sedan. You know.
Yeah, I guess that's sort of right now that appeals to me because they just have this one model. You know, this one sort of mainstream model. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like maybe they are coming out with an SUV. I mean, which would only follow if they've got a Volvo SUV, basically with the same mechanicals. Yeah. And I suppose it. A sedan or something will follow too, but I think so many, whether it's Tesla, whether it's Porsche, whether it's Chevy with the Volt, everyone comes out with a car first, everyone comes out with a sedan first, and so I think they're trying to do something a little different here by almost making it more like an Outback, you know, a little bit lifted, a little more, you know, Butch or whatever, you know, so maybe that was their reasoning there. The SUV wasn't quite ready yet. You know?
Maybe. I mean, these things that the big thing electric cars are struggling with still is weight. So,
this thing weighs like 4,700 pounds, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, but they all do, right?
They all do. All the electric cars are pound for pound heavier than their gas equivalents. Yeah. So, but, you know, I guess it was just such a, you know, like the profile of the lines are so sharp. They're so nice. Yeah. The lighting on it, I mean, the lights are just. You know, these almost like these works of art. I just wish I could have seen it in a lower. I prefer if it's a sedan.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get the benefit of all the space, and I want to have it lower, and I want to have the lower center gravity.
Well, that's it. It's not a big car on the inside. I mean, I didn't have a lot of headroom. I have more headroom in our Tiguan. I probably could have spent more time adjusting the seat or whatever, but it's not a big car. It would be like maybe a 3 Series Touring on the inside. Maybe a little more space than
maybe a little wider. I'd say, it's probably a little wider. Yeah, I think in every other dimension. Yeah, you're the same. I didn't sit in the back seats.
I didn't either. So, you know,
I
got a little tour. I got to see under the hood, and there's just I don't know why this is such a big deal, but all the car guys are released their ID4. There must have been an embargo. They'll release their ID4 reviews here in the last day or two. And the one thing they all seem to share was if you open the hood. There's a little space, but there's not any sort of shelf or whatever. So one thing I liked about the Polestar 2, you open the hood, it's a very shallow space, but it's a place to put the charging cables. Yeah. You have your 110 cable, your 220 whatever cable, your whatever the Polestar equivalent of the supercharger. There seemed to be something else into there.
Yeah, they give you kind of give you like a multi-point dongle to plug into anything, which is nice. Yeah.
And to come back to the interior about, you know, how it seemed expensive and luxury, but didn't do it in the traditional ways. I did like how durable it seemed. And as someone who, you know, so as a youngish child, you know, and as careful as she is, I want a durable car. At the end of the day, for $60,000, what does $60,000 get you in that? I mean, could you get a 5 Series BMW? I mean, that's my dilemma. Would I take this over any Tesla? 100%. It's the closest thing yet that I would come to buying.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I, that's what I was thinking is that even though, you know, like I said, I had a few critiques on just, I just wish it was either a sedan or an SUV. I wish it wasn't kind of in between, but you know, I when I was done, I walked away. I looked over my shoulder. I have to admit, I looked at it. I said, it's really great looking. And I was like, this would be I feel like owning this car would be, pleasurable. It would be nice to be driving around in. I would love it for the longer trips, it gets a little bit of a range issue going up the mountains.
190 miles, I think, in the current form.
Yeah, and my guy, Jorge, said he was able to get it up on a round trip going up to the mountains, I think, to Estes Park and back on a charge, which is good. So,
I guess I want to say, I hope so, but I mean, that's about right.
But I would feel like, assuming that I could live with the range, I think, I would feel like I would love driving that thing around every day. It would be a great daily driver.
I think for me, if they do come out with a $35,000 or $40,000 model to maybe compete more directly with the base Model 3, as long as it was all-wheel drive, I think I would want all-wheel drive on a family vehicle, you know, the daily driver here in Colorado. I think that's probably the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't need a performance car. I've got a performance car. I don't need a family car that does 0-60 in 4 seconds.
Yeah.
You know? It doesn't, obviously, it's not a performance car in the way that a GT4 is. You're not getting the, you know, for a number of reasons. But I need a daily driver that's going to keep me out of trouble. Yeah. And, you know, if they came out with a 250 horsepower version,
yeah,
that's plenty.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, from that perspective.
For that kind of car.
Electric cars might be a problem because you're not aware when you're going fast because it's so, like I said, it was so smooth, quiet, so undramatic.
Yeah, yeah. It's a very, you know, I read an article once, I think, on Jalopnik about one of the guys had a full-size pickup truck and he had it for a long-term test. And obviously, you know, he could cruise on the highway doing 110 and would never get pulled over.
Yeah.
It was just sort of, I don't know, just sort of blended into the landscape or whatever.
Hmm.
And, you know, I do kind of wonder, you know, like with the Tiguan here, no one, you could be doing 130, I mean, you can't, but if you'd be doing that and no one would ever...
Yeah.
Think twice. I mean, and I sort of feel like this is one of those, it's anonymous enough to be good, but it's also distinctive enough to be desirable. It's really, really, it's a sweet spot as far as, you know, it's those who know,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
We talked about
no, that's good. That's a good spot to be.
I think I would, I you know, we will probably trade the Tiguan in on something over, you know, next year or so. I think especially if they come out with a slightly cheaper model, we will 100% check it out.
Yeah.
We don't, especially COVID, we haven't been taking cross country trips. And if we did, we'd rent a car. This electric car checks off more boxes for me than any that have come before it.
And a lot of people say once you kind of get used to electric cars or daily,
you're
just kind of doing sort of all the errands.
Yeah, that's what makes more sense.
People like it, especially for us who live in a city.
You know,
doing a lot of shorter trips.
Yeah.
It's almost like once you do it, you don't go back to anything else. So,
Number
I've heard. And then you still, for now, I think you have to have a gas car for any. If you're trying to do any longer trips
or
if you want a performance car, you need the gas car. But like the one that's kind of like the appliance vehicle, the one that, you know, you just sort of rely on every day.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way to go.
It's $60,000, even with, say, an $8,000 government credit or whatever, still a $52,000 car base, you know, to start. That's probably more than I want to spend on a daily driver car that's, you know, going to go to Costco or whatever. But yeah, at 35 or 40,000 and then plus the discount on top of that now we're talking. That's where I'm a player for an electric car. Again, it doesn't have to be one car does everything for me. It doesn't have to be a performance car. It just has to do everything else well, right?
Yeah.
And it sure seemed to do that. Anything that disappointed you about it? I mean, I have a couple thoughts.
I feel like I've already cut that sort of high riding.
Yeah. Okay. So that appealed to me. That didn't appeal to you.
Didn't appeal to me. But I guess maybe like it didn't. And this is kind of a running problem with a lot of these cars. I mean, that trunk area was really small because that's where you have a lot of the motor and a lot of the battery pack is
right
there.
Right.
So you kind of open up this hatch and you have a very very nice,
right.
very relatively small sort of a shelf there to put stuff on.
Sure. But
outside of that, no, I was overall impressed. I mean, the driving experience was great. The interior was great. Very comfortable. Great tech. So
I wish I had a normal shifter, but even I see cars, gasoline powered cars, are going
to use new shifters anymore. I was going to say that's sort of the same thing.
I didn't want to say anything at the time. I was not impressed with the stereo system, but who knows what the settings were set at. The Harman Kardon system, I know there's sort of a, they're kind of the General Motors of high fidelity, you know, they're just sort of there. I mean, it's a good brand step up probably from what the factory would do, but at least in the settings it was in, it didn't really do much for me. You know, it's got the big giant panoramic sunroof, which, again, for me, I'm okay with the sunroof. I like a sunroof sometimes, you know, especially on a daily driver. But that was a lot of glass. I can only imagine that was a lot of weight. It seems like a car that weighs 4,700 pounds. You could probably save a couple hundred pounds by just giving me a normal sunroof. And I imagine if they come in with a cheaper model, it would just either probably not have a sunroof or...
Probably has
in Colorado, it's a lot of sun hitting all the time in the summer. That's something I guess I would happily get rid of to shave some money and save some weight.
Yeah. Yeah, and not only just weight, but weight up high is always the worst. It's like it's like when you shed weight, it's that high, you actually shed. It's almost like getting 2 pounds somewhere else.
Yeah, and so, I'm sure this model had everything, or whatever. I say this is a $60,000 or $61,000 car, but I have no idea what this car was.
That's tested. I asked. Mine was. He said it was optioned out at like 61.
So maybe there really aren't a lot of options. Maybe it's like the new GT3, you know, where there are just a handful of options. So I like that too. I also like, you know, I'm watching the Doug DeMuro review of the M3 and. this is the we've talked about this before. You asked me the other day why when I bought my first Cayman, the 2017, when I bought that new, I cross shot the M2 at the same time, and I said, you know, you asked me why didn't I like it? Why did I go with the Cayman? I didn't think it was quite special enough. I didn't like the screen tacked on the dash. But come to think of it, one of the things I really didn't like about that car was all the settings. You go into the GT4, there's not even a sport button. You're just driving. My old Cayman was like that. You know, it didn't have the dial or anything on the steering. You just got in and drove. The new M3, you know, it's got the M1 button, the M2 button, the M button in the middle. I don't want any of that. Just give me one setting, you know, or maybe two, you know. And that's one of the things I liked about this Volvo. You didn't have I called it a Volvo, the Polestar. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could see how I can make that mistake. But one of the things I liked about that is it didn't have those gimmicks. You know, there was no fart noise generator or whatever like on the Tesla.
Yeah, the whooping cushion. Yeah,
don't insult me with that crap, Tesla. You know, I mean, this is a car that spoke to me like a grown-up, and I think that was my biggest takeaway.
Yeah, I think it's a great product. I think they are going to do really well with it, and if the product line expands, you said, and comes down into that $35,000-$40,000
mark,
I'd say watch out. I mean, I've assumed this. I mean, I guess Tesla's been the disruptor, and they're the ones who really have, you know, put some of these car companies on their heels a little bit. But
it's because they don't play by the rules, Doug.
They don't. But I mean, and they do have a significant range advantage over everybody else right now. But you know, I think there's some dubious claims on that as well too. But once the other car companies get serious about manufacturing electric cars, I mean, they know how to screw things together.
Well,
they know how to put
that's
it together.
The big difference, isn't
and they
it?
Know how to. Yeah, they know how to. And you know, like I said, I mean, you know, you bring what Volvo's already doing great over here.
Yeah,
combine it with electric. You have some more funding from the Chinese parent company. It's a great product.
Yeah,
I mean, they're gonna do really well. I would be proud to own it.
Oh yeah,
I'd be proud to drive it.
Yeah,
you know,
again, it's that sweet spot of being nice but not ostentatious. Sort of giving everything you need, maybe not none of the things you don't. I want to come back. I want to talk.
The new Xterra.
that was
the old tagline in the new Xterra.
Except for the basket that rattles around on the roof. But
everything you need and nothing you don't.
So. Well, I want to come back. I want to talk a little bit about how they're selling this in the dealer network. So why don't we take a break and we'll come back and touch on that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we're back. And before I wonder who our sponsor is today. Blue Chew? Some sort of mattress.
There's a lot of that.
We have the weirdest sponsors that pop up, but and for the record, we don't have any say for the most part. Just the ones we
Regis University, I think.
Regis, you're going to tell us something. Well, we talked a little bit about the Polestar being was brought to us, and this is sort of the thing. There is not a Polestar dealer network, so very much like Tesla, there are sort of pop up or in mall boutique. Sort of experience centers.
Yep.
And then, you know, there is, of course, the service center or whatever, but there's really no retail as far as I know. And it's the same thing here. And there seemed to be this, one of the selling points seemed to be if you ever have to have service, we'll come get it. And of course, you knowing me, Doug, you think, I don't want someone driving my car taking it up. Because you know they're just driving down to the Volvo dealer anyway, right? Like, can I just do that myself?
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, I'm sure that has an appeal, you know? Maybe people who are, whose time is worth more than mine, but, you know, I don't, $60,000 car, hey, you know what, I'll drop it off myself.
Audience, I'm not sure if you're aware or not, but Ryan's a little protective of his cars. I don't know if that's come across in any of our previous episodes, but I mean, I like that. I would let someone come and take it. But I won't. My standing rule, though, is I'll never valet park a car I like, though.
Well, so that's why I'm a little afraid. We've talked this. Yeah. You valeted yourself in a former life, and it's.
I guess I'm just assuming that Polestar attracts a higher quality of people than the valet company I work for. So,
there's probably a way to track the thing, and everything else is probably a valet key or whatever.
Oh yeah, I'm sure you can definitely keep track of it. But
what do you think about this? Because I mean. Again, this is not a positive thing for me. I guess I like a traditional dealer, a showroom. I like to go in. I like to. I don't know. Maybe I need to get with the future. I
think
probably where we're headed.
My take on it is, I've had enough negative dealer experiences that I am fine with any sort of new model that might help shake them up a little bit. So,
but part of it's like, what you can't see won't hurt you. Like, we're going to take it behind the curtain, do our thing, and then come out.
Well, not even that. It's more just on the sales side, honestly. Yeah. Like, I've just had enough like bad experiences with sales guys and sales people.
Well, I think we all have.
Yeah, and you know,
Porsche of Colorado Springs excluded. You guys get a pass, but it's,
but everyone else
is on warning. Sure.
Yeah, everyone else is on warning. So if companies have been trying to, you know, Tesla has been trying to do this, and they've really gone to the mattresses on this, and they've had success and
gone to the mattresses.
Yeah, another phrase. Gone to the mattresses?
I don't know. That's,
it's from The Godfather. Yeah. You know?
I've never actually watched that movie.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a phrase.
I'm not calling you out. I just never heard that.
So. Oh, it's a phrase. I mean, in the book and in the movies.
Okay.
It's when two rival gangs back then went to war.
Okay.
You went to the mattresses because you basically had to get other soldiers. You had to find some cheap rental apartments, get some mattresses. Okay. You don't want them, if they're at war with each other, you want them going home where people can find out where they live.
There was some romantic connotation or something. Okay. So,
no, this is a well-known phrase.
I trust you. I guess I'm too busy
watching
Oak Island to...
they don't talk about that.
Yeah, and car shows on YouTube. But
I mean, that Tesla's gone to battle in a number of states and had some success and some failures of being able to be a direct to customer sales.
Yeah.
I'm fine with it because at best it'll be, you know, an experiment that doesn't go anywhere.
Sure.
At worst, at best it might actually force some of these dealers to change the way they do things.
The dealer thing is that's a whole weird scene. It's different state to state, but absolutely, you get rid of the dealer network, you get rid of probably your number one expense after the manufacturer of the car, right? I mean, the dealer network is interesting, right? I mean, it really is a relic of another era. The whole reasons it sort of came to be and antitrust and all this. I mean, it's amazing that they've been able to sort of keep it up this long.
Yeah, yeah. And it was from a different time period, but we've held on to that model for a long time.
Yeah,
it's kind of a weird, it's sort of a weird model in general.
It is. I'm trying to
sell
this,
into retail products, but
I mean, there are a few. Yeah. You know, the only other sort of parallel or analog I can draw with this is the high fidelity community, right? Where even to this day, most of the good brands you cannot buy online. You cannot buy from the big box. Mm-hmm. Retailers, you know, there have been some developments over the years. Best Buy rolled out this Magnolia thing, which was like a high fidelity. I guess this was pre Chip and Joanna Gaines.
I thought they got into the stereo business.
This was sort of like kind of the workaround, but in their thinking is they don't want you to, you know, it's so subjective, right? Audio and hi-fi you know, there have always sort of been the rebels or whatever, you know, whether it's Cambridge Audio Works or whatever. It was only direct to home. But really,
that's what my dad had growing up.
Well, that was always cool stuff. Harry Kloss or Koss was his name.
Yeah.
He had a bunch of businesses over the years. But the real high end stuff, I mean, to this day, most of it is you have to buy it in a showroom. And so, but I'm trying to think of any other things that are like, I mean, there are very few industries anymore where you sort of have to play their game like that, you know?
Yeah.
And then, of course, I read on Jalopnik about, you know, all these dealer horror stories about where they basically hold you captive, they hide your keys, they, you know, they block you into the parking lot. I mean, it's not like these guys aren't asking to be just completely wiped off the map. But there's some great dealers out there too.
No, there's obviously. It's like most things. There are some particularly bad apples that everyone remembers and everyone talks about, and they do. They ruin it for the people who are trying to work well with the or do an honest job there. But you hear there was a story that they basically put out there as like tell your worst like story about
that.
And they said the dealer basically told me like
it must have been a slow day at Jalopnik.
I was already He said you're already locked into this deal. We've already gotten rid of your trade in. Like we've already sold it. And he's like it was like an hour ago. And it's like, well, clearly that's not true. But like they were basically just trying to strong arm.
Well, when I was a younger person buying my first cars as an adult and you know, stretching a little further than I probably should have at the time. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I was just thrilled to get a car, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know.
Show me this shiny object.
Right, you know.
Take my money, please.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I got, you know, I don't want to say I got scammed, but I mean, I'm sure I paid a much higher interest rate, you know, once or twice as a younger person, things like that, you know? I just didn't know. I didn't know. They don't teach you that. They don't teach you in high school how to buy a car. They don't teach you about. You know, I mean, it's so. I mean, it's hard to feel sorry, I guess.
Yeah.
For these guys.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I don't care. I don't really. I'm not asking for them to be put out of business, but I'm just asking for them.
There could be both.
There could be. Yeah.
Why not both?
A little disruption. A little. You know.
We serve them both.
Exactly. So I'm okay with that. And so apparently in Colorado we're going to be one of these pop-up locations.
Yeah. Just up the street here.
Jorge was saying that they had the spot picked out in Cherry Creek.
Yeah,
so it'll be interesting. Cool. Once it's there, I think we should go check it out.
I do wonder. I mean, I think it just by design, it'll always be a little. Polestar as a brand will probably always be a little bit of a niche product, but it'll be very interesting to see as they roll out more models. You know, how many of them really are different from the Volvo models? How many are the same? So really, how they differentiate themselves. You know, will it become more of a performance division, or more of an extra luxury division, sort of a Maybach to, you know, their Mercedes or, you know, it'll be interesting. I really enjoyed driving the car. I liked almost everything about it. Like I said, it's a car I would certainly consider buying. I didn't want to like it either.
You're hesitant too. Yeah.
But I liked it just that it wasn't a Tesla, I guess, and all that baggage that goes along with, you know, being a Tesla fan boy.
It might be the best thing to say about it is that it's not a Tesla. But it does everything a Tesla does, but just I feel like it does. It delivers it in a much feels like it just felt like a much more professional, much more well executed product.
It felt more like me, but it felt more like you too. It felt
highly.
More home.
So we both highly recommend it. You could say it's steering committee approved.
Steering committee approved.
Good. There's our stamp. Go check one out.
Hold it down. I'm going to stick it with a hot iron.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. we should be able to bring our stamp with us. Stamp the cars that we like as we drive.
They bring the car by. They just look at us and keep driving. But anyway, yeah.
But,
so.
But yeah, so that's our recommendation. Yeah, Go check one out.
Yeah.
It is, to
me, the most attractive electric car on the market at its price right now. So
absolutely.
There's other car stuff going on in the world, I guess. I don't know. I got the GT4 out for a little bit.
Yeah.
But hey, before we move on, thank you, Polestar. Thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Jorge. Mm-hmm. Let's do this again sometime,
We'd love to do it again. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
GT4, took it out. Of course, it was...
We've had some great weather here in Denver.
A day or two when I'm not working. I like to get out and
but we had like 60, 70 degree temperatures.
But everyone was out. That was the problem. And I hardly got talked about the long gear in this car.
Well, everyone
hardly got out of second gear. You know?
Everyone was out. And then we also were apparently getting completely buried in snow again. So I think everyone thought this was their last chance to get out.
Yeah, so, 3 feet of snow? If you get half that, it's going
to
be
I've heard everything from 12 inches to 90 inches.
Okay, well, you know, it's okay to round up. Talking inches, Doug.
Hopefully we'll survive them for our next episode after this. So if this is our farewell episode, we're buried under snow.
Right. I was telling Doug, you know, it's time to plug the car in again. It looks like it's going to be another few weeks.
It's going to be
But I did, you know, everyone and their mother was out. And there weren't a ton of sports cars. Oh, it reminded me to come back to, I have a new sport. What is a sports car? We're going to come back to that. Okay. I've talked about it before, but I have a new quantifiable, if you want to call it that, test.
Okay.
Didn't see a ton of sports cars out, but I did pass on Golden Gate Canyon coming the other way. What sure seemed to me to be a Miami Blue Singer. And if it wasn't a Singer, it was a really nice sort of car done
really
in that
nice resto mode.
Way. I gave him a wave, a thumbs up. Guy didn't even look my way, but I know when you're in the canyons, you're not always paying attention, just trying to get around the corner or whatever. But really beautiful car. Also rolled up onto a guy here in the neighborhood, Colorado Boulevard, not quite in the neighborhood. I can't say there's anyone in my neighborhood that has a 488 Ferrari, but rolled up and talked to an older guy in this 488. And I think he thought I was going to carjack him or something. He was sporting a very nice Rolex Daytona. behind the wheel of this 488.
Was his arm out of the on the
No, he was on display, he was very very eyes forward, 10-2, you know.
Okay. But you could see the Daytona on his arm.
Yeah, you know, and I tried to
let's get this. Do watch guys just know other watch guys
as well? Yeah, Daytona's a pretty iconic watch, you know, when you see it, of course. So I rolled up next to him and trying to flash off my Explorer 2, which isn't quite the same, and my GT4, which isn't quite the same. What you talk about with the moment where you're the big guy on campus and then, you know, the guy in the 488 rolls up, you know?
For our non-watching audience, what's the difference between a, in car terms, what's the difference between a Daytona and an Explorer?
A GT4 and a Ferrari 488, basically, you know?
Exactly what you're
in. Yeah. They're both very nice, is about twice the price of the other, so.
Okay, all right. But that still means the Explorer is a very nice premium product.
Well, and I should say the Daytona, the sticker is not twice the price, but in the, you know, but they just get that much markup. So
But like in prestige level, that's what we're talking about,
though. Yeah. I mean, this guy, you know, he didn't have the newest ceramic ones. We've got to factor that in. That's, you know, ceramic bezel. But anyway,
like that, we turned into a watch podcast.
Right. But hey, this guy was also probably twice my age, so we're good. That's a little bit of an exaggeration, but yeah. So I was on the phone today. I was looking for a picture of a car. We have a neighbor here, a friend of both of ours. He's been looking for an S4, maybe even an RS4, B7 Audi. And, you know, I've owned a couple of Audis. I had a 2008, a B7 S4, the V8, and trying to give him some guidance. I know they have some unique quirks and features. And, and you know, the 997 Porsche has its IMS, the 996, the B7 and B6 Audis have their Achilles heels as well. Carbon buildup in the RS4, all kinds of stuff. But they're such cool cars. And so I was trying to find a picture on my phone. I have an iPhone, like probably most of the listeners do. Although there are a few weirdos out there on other things. We can see you on our analytics. I wanted to show him a picture of my 2008 S4 that I had back in the day, because I thought it had a certain set of factory wheels that were unusual, and they kind of aped the RS4 style, just an inch smaller. And I was looking for the picture of the car. But, of course, the last picture on my phone of this car was years ago. And so I only recently learned that you can voice search for pictures on your phone. So you can say, show me pictures of cars, right? Hmm. I couldn't find it. And so I said, well, show me pictures of sports cars. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, so there were about 380 car pictures on my phone. There were only about 120 that Siri christened sports cars.
Okay, so
Siri's
criteria?
What do you think Siri's criteria
for sports car?
Because it was very interesting, because it obviously got rid of a lot of the four doors and things like that, but not all of them. So I was amazed at the level of accuracy, because my buddy's E39 M5 four-door stuck.
Okay.
The Cayman stuck, the 911 stuck, but my 2001 B5 A4 was nowhere to be found.
Okay.
The Honda Fit that we had, that I had some pictures of when we traded it in, nowhere to be found. The Tiguan was gone, obviously. So it's amazing to me that it can distinguish between, or at least
Siri
what it perceives as a car and a sports car.
But more specifically, it was differentiating between enthusiast and like non-enthusiast.
Basically,
cars.
Yeah. Right. It wasn't, I thought, okay, well, they'll get rid of the four doors, or they'll get rid of, you know.
Because that M5 is a fantastic
car. It is, but
it's a sports sedan. It's one of the first sports sedans out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's...
And it defines the market, but I mean, you could argue, you could argue that it wouldn't have fallen into the sports car category, but it should, because that's the kind of car you want to look at.
Yeah.
So Siri knows what it... maybe your Siri knows.
Well, so we've argued about this, what's a sports car, basically?
Yeah.
And there are people certainly listening, and, you know, when I had my A4, I certainly thought that was a sports car. You know, but what's a, you know, is a sports car or a convertible? You know, I mean, this has been, you know, discussed ad nauseum. But so for those of you listening, if you are in the camp where you're not really sure if you're driving a real sports car or not, ask Siri, because she may have an opinion.
She might have an opinion.
How much further can we break it down? Like, what's an exotic car? What's a supercar? What's a grand tourer? I mean, I'd be very curious, because someone programmed that in. You know, what are the characteristics for a sports car that were fed into this entity that is Siri. I'd be very curious to know.
I wonder, and here's what I wonder. Here's maybe we should do some experiments on it. I bet that it's possible they only wrote one program that says, like, help find sports cars.
Uh-huh.
Because they figured people might want to show someone a sports car they saw, like, a few weeks ago.
Right.
But I bet we can't say, like, show me all the minivan pictures on my phone.
I don't know. We have to try. What happens if you put, the argument is, you know, is a unibody SUV a truck? Would it distinguish between a Suburban and a Tiguan or whatever, you know, or an X5, you know, or a more pedestrian sort of?
I must know.
I mean, this is fascinating to me.
Right, well, we've set up an experiment.
Well, is it all built out sort of on user feedback? Like, I mean, is it all, you know, is it what these pictures, does it know the form of these cars and people are tagging it one way or the other and it sways in the direction that, I mean, well, is this a truly artificial? Well, that's a whole other philosophical thing.
Well, is this truly artificial, or is this doing the differentiated? I could definitely understand because Google, you know, they've organized the internet. And they know. I mean, they could probably differentiate between minivans and K-vans. You know what I mean? They could be that precise.
But is it just right? But that's a size thing, right? I mean, what else? What other factors is it? I mean, I thought that was fascinating. You know,
that's interesting. So in your mind, so basically, when you asked Siri to do it on your phone, it basically cut out all the boring cars and just left you with all the exciting.
Okay, we're going to do this
live
in real time. Yeah. Okay, we're going to do this, and I think this the microphone will pick this up. But Siri, show me all the pictures of cars I have. That's the no results. So 327 photos, okay, on my iPhone.
Yeah.
Here's the first picture.
Let me see a little bit what we're working on.
Doug, you can be the unbiased narrator here.
So these are the ones that's starting to show you, right?
Yeah. Okay. So what are we seeing? Just look at those six or nine pictures. Tell me what's in those.
So this, if we consider this to be a reasonable sample of what it gives you.
This is an enthusiast's phone here, so they're going to be skewed. But.
Yeah. You and I might have more pictures of cars on our phone.
Friends' cars I've seen around, you know.
I would say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 are pictures of cars.
Okay.
And that ranges from, you know.
What pictures are of cars?
Well, I would argue there's two pictures on here that are just of your daughter.
In front of a car?
No, I would say no.
Oh, well, the one she's in an amusement park.
One she might be, it looks like it might be like a toy car that she's sitting in. But the other one is just a very nice profile picture of her.
But yeah, okay.
So, but it's just a picture. I guess there is a car in the background.
Ah, okay.
So that might be what it's picking up on.
But the thing here is it told us I have 327 pictures in my photos on my phone of cars.
And this is probably, I guess it's picking up, and you know, in the other picture when she's in the toy car, there's some cars in the background.
Okay.
So I guess it's picking up anytime it sees a car, either in the foreground or background.
In what cars is it qualifying here? Or is it saying qualify?
It's just, like I said, I mean.
Just generic cars.
Yeah, the ones in the background are just cars in the parking lot.
There's at least one 993 turbo in there, I know. But
there's a,
Shout out to Nick.
I assume that's Nick there in the picture. But it's everything from like some cars on the road. Maybe you're taking a picture of just the traffic ahead of you. There's a picture here of just like your rear wheel on your Tiguan.
Yeah.
There's a picture.
So anything.
And then a picture of a GT3 from behind. You know?
Okay. So
anything that can be classified as car.
That speaks car or says car to Siri. Yeah. So it could be a wheel.
Even if it's in the background, even if it's if it's the main subject. So now try.
Okay.
Show me sports cars.
Right. Siri, show me the sports cars in my photos. Didn't find any matching photos. Siri, show me sports cars in my photos. Okay, it worked this time. Okay, now we're down to 81.
81, so we had 320-something in your last round, and now you're down to 81.
Yes, so in these pictures, I will say, okay, so there are nine pictures, and the cars that it is telling me are sports cars. The first nine that pop up, my old 997 Carrera S, my buddy's Lotus Elise. Here's a 993 Carrera 4S. There is a 997-2 GT3. Here's another lineup that's a 944, an M3, and something else. Here's my daughter, an extra Ferrari 360. Here's a McLaren 650, I think. My old Cayman, and then a Bentley Continental. So, okay, these are all two doors.
Yeah.
Right? Interesting. No M5 this time. So I'm thinking, I mean, we could play this game all day, but it's fascinating to me. And that.
But these are, I would say right off the bat, this is a much more focused collection of photos of specific cars.
So again, and we'll shut up about this. But if you are doubting whether your car is an actual sports car, not just ask Siri and be very curious to know what shows up. Should we run the legacy GT wagon through this? Are you afraid to run the legacy? No, I'm kidding.
No, I'm not afraid.
Would your neon SRT qualify if you ran it through the...
If I thought I could run it with... Well, we're still recording. I wonder if I can ask that on my phone. So if we lose this here, that's because we've lost the recording.
Sure, you want to do
here,
this.
Well, we'll take... How about this? We'll take a quick pause and I'll do it on my phone and we'll find out what happened here. All right.
Okay, we'll be back.
All right. Well, we're back. We've taken a look at my photos. And what do you notice from my photos, Ryan?
So you have, I think, just a higher occurrence of what I would consider sports cars in your phone. Okay. So we asked Doug's phone. He has 264 pictures of cars down against my 300 and some odd.
Yeah.
Question your car guy card. No, I'm kidding. So what
I thought
you
I was
have
gonna be way higher.
So you have 9 pictures here. You have a Focus RS, I think it is, a 560 SEC Mercedes.
Yeah.
Some sort of Outlaw 911. You have a 996 Turbo or Carrera 4S. You have one of our buddy Ryan's his classic Mini.
Classic Mini.
With my big
giant
hanging out the window.
Sasquatch driving.
Yeah, and the even tinier car, the little red German. I forget what it's called.
Yeah.
With the BMW boxer engine. You've got a Singer. You've got an M5 Touring, an E39.
Mm.
And lastly, a picture of Goodr, G-O-O-D-R, sunglasses in front of a classic Ferrari. Is that a 512 TR?
It's a GTO.
GTO. I'm not a Ferrari guy. Okay. Yeah. So
that was just
these
cars.
Are your cars.
That was just cars, yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So then we asked Doug's Siri. For his sports cars, he's got a 996.2 Carrera. You've got a is that a Subaru? Is that your legacy GT?
It is not.
No, it's a different color.
I would argue this might be where Sirius failed us a little bit. I'm pretty sure that's just an Outback, a late model Outback.
On a spare donut.
Yeah, it's on a donut, and it's also kind of covered by a tree. That's why it's a little hard to see. But
okay. A Voodoo Blue or similar 997, 9911 GT3 RS.
It's from the rally. That's the
You've got Will Powers, I think, 9971 Targa 4.
Yep.
Again, our buddy Ryan's, this is his, one of his, isn't terrible. I can't always tell the newer Minis apart, but it's one of his, John Cooper Works GPs.
Yeah. It's one of the GP Minis.
Right.
I think that's the 2011.
Okay. You've got my old Cayman, a 9911 Turbo, a 360,
Ferrari
and a, 2.5 RS.
Friend, that's the 22B.
Oh, STI. Sorry. I see that now.
22B. Yeah. The Subaru fanboys would crucify you.
So it did, it did draw a line. Yeah. It wasn't I don't know what you want to call it. You had more sports cars, I guess, when it just...
More sports cars, but that Outback was a real miss, though.
What do you think? So I'm looking... I will say that most of the cars obscured by a bush.
Yeah.
So maybe that helped. You couldn't tell how many doors.
Yeah.
It does look pretty a little murdered out on the black rim, the one black rim, I'll admit. But anyway, so something going on there. It seems to be something around the door count, but not just the door count.
Well, and maybe also on mine, at least the colors. I feel like it's like more. There's
that's
more
a thought.
Colors
that's a
too,
thought. So, yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyone who works for Google out there, let us know what's going on here, because
or Apple, right?
Or Apple. Yeah. Right. Right. Siri, this is an Apple product, or make up a story and send it to us, and we'll run with it and just call it truth.
Well, so how about this? If anyone. Do this if you have an iPhone. Do this. It gives you picture.
Send us a screenshot.
Send us a screenshot to our Facebook page.
Yeah, yeah. We'll pick the best one. We'll send you a T-shirt. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to see what other people's, because I know anyone that listens to this podcast probably has a lot of you know, car pictures on their phone more than the average.
Yeah, be careful what you send or don't. But yeah, it's yeah, we're looking forward to seeing who's got the best results.
We'll put we'll put Rind and mine up there as well.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. It's I mean, obviously, I'm probably, you know, the chance of me taking a picture of a car that isn't a sports car. Well, I took a picture of the beautiful Defender 90 that was parked at Esther's up the street the other night. Yeah. It looked better than brand new. And it was, I believe, an NAS, you know, North American spec. Yeah. Defender 90 hardtop, white. It was amazing. I mean, I probably would have traded my GT4 for this thing in the moment. I was so taken by this vehicle. Whoa. Well, I mean, that's why I love that boat, right? Like, that's... Yeah. But this one was so nice, I wouldn't even daily it. It would have to take the place of the GT4 as a special weekend car. It was so nice. But that car, the Defender 90, did not pop up.
Okay.
That didn't even pop up for cars. So is that a truck? Anyway.
Well, but it's only giving you sort of a 9-picture sample. I guess we have to look at.
That's true, too.
Yeah.
Maybe next time we'll look at page 2. Anyway.
Yeah.
But enough of that. It's fascinating, though.
Yeah. That's interesting.
What else is going on in your world of cars, Doug? We've seen some interesting stuff. I saw my first Mach-E.
Yeah, saw a Mach-E today.
Yeah.
And I told you I saw an RS6 Avant.
I've seen a couple of those now. Really cool.
I've seen a couple.
Yeah. What was that one at Denver Auto Shield? There was one that was being picked up when I was dropping. Or maybe you weren't there and I just sent you a picture.
I didn't see it. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I did notice Denver Auto Shield, of course, where I got my car wrapped. I got the protective film and they did a great job. But this is also... down the street from the infamous railroad crossing that we talked about last week. I happened to go over there the last couple of days.
Yeah,
they have not commenced work on that. I think it's like much like Atlantis rising from the deep. I feel like it's come higher. Up another inch or two.
How many do you think? I mean, we're about to get another snowstorm. Do you think there's like? Do you think
someone's going to die on that thing?
Do you think like a bunch of like plow? Plows have been wrecked trying to like clear that road. They probably just don't do it.
I don't know what to make of that, but it's really really awful. I mean,
a plow would either get wrecked or it would wreck the railroad tracks, and then a train would derail.
One or the other. It's a size of concrete about the size of half a parking space. Wow. Right? Yeah. Would you say it's the space between the two railroad tracks? And it's like, have you ever seen? You ever been able to not sleep and you watch like the Discovery Channel at 3 a.m. and they have these, you know, Mysteries of the White House where they have these bollards that, you know, will come up out of the ground, you know, with you know.
Yeah, like a security measure.
Yeah. Like, you know, using like a bullet blank or whatever. So it's immediate and almost like an airbag or something.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like that where it's almost like, but it's just happening in slow motion. It's
natural.
Yeah. It's like a tectonic plate, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep talking about that till it gets fixed.
Okay.
What else is going on? We haven't been driving. We haven't been driving
between much.
Work and weather and everything. You're still rocking the Legacy GT. That's working for you.
Love that car still.
Yeah. I only ever see you in this Lexus LX 470, but.
Yeah. I
Is it the LX 470?
It's the GX 470.
GX, because the LX would be the Land Cruiser.
That's right.
Yeah. You're not that cool. So
no, I'm not that cool. Well, but this is, you know, this, as we've discussed, the GX 470 is also sold as a Land Cruiser product in other markets.
Yes.
And it's a good truck. But I'll tell you, I was driving it back from the mountains this weekend.
With the One Percenters this weekend?
Yeah, it's just hanging out with all the One Percenters. All the One Percenters just sort of, you know, figuring out how everything's going to work behind the scenes. Don't worry about it, guys.
Right. Which levers are you going to pull?
Yeah, exactly. The next couple elections, we got those things worked out this weekend, so don't worry about it. But I didn't, you know what, I decided I hated, and I liked that truck a lot, but when we're driving down at night through the last bit there as you kind of come through.
Is that Floyd Hill? Is that what we call
that? Yeah, we'll call it that general area here in Colorado on 70.
Which sounds like a guy,
It's a windy section of high-speed highway.
Yeah.
And if you're driving at night, I hated the feeling of being up high in that SUV.
Yeah.
Making those turns.
And I do remember, didn't this car get into some trouble for like moose tests or whatever when it was new?
You're close.
Yeah.
So the immediate replacement for this was the GX 460. That car, when it first hit the market, had a bunch of journalists discovered quickly that there was...
The newer one. Really?
Had a serious problem. The car in general is very high.
Yeah.
It has a high center of gravity.
Yeah.
I think that's why they had to do the side.
You know, you got to have a good vantage point for your large caliber machine gun.
As you're just sort of rolling over common people, you need to be able to sort of see where they are.
Right.
So, But like, you know, it the door on both of them, from the old one to the new one, opens to the side, because I think they realized like if it couldn't go up, you wouldn't be able to reach.
You're talking about the rear door.
The hatch on the back. Okay. Yeah. But the new one, the 460s had early models of that had a rollover issue where guys were, if you're sort of in a corner and you hit the brake the wrong way, the truck had a tendency to flip over, which was not great.
No good.
So yeah,
it's no good.
I wouldn't say that this car has that problem, but I felt a little unstable at high speed making those turns coming down, and not high speed. I just mean like I'm talking about just going with the flow of traffic on a highway, 65-70 miles an hour. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I just don't like that. It's a true body on frame SUV.
It's a real truck. Yeah, yeah, it's an SUV. And I feel like if we're coming down from the mountains a lot, I think I just want to be in something lower now. So I want that RS6 Avant is what I want.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the, of course, it's such a nice and expensive, you know, what does it start at? 100, 110, and a lot of them are even higher.
120.
I'm not going to go take that out in the salt and the snow.
I
don't think I would. I don't. Yeah. And Colorado is not as bad. I mean, we don't get all the big potholes. I mean, we get a few. We don't get all the salt usage and, you know, like some of the other places listeners may be listening from. But yeah, I couldn't take that out into the elements. It's too special of a car. And I know that, I mean, I guess I'd rather have that than just get something more pedestrian every day. That's a dilemma, because that's like an everyday supercar, right?
Yeah.
Like, so where do you draw the line with that? Like, where do you, I mean, is that, I guess if you have enough money, it doesn't matter. But.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the car is well out of my my range of affordability. Yeah. But I mean, if I was already looking at a daily driver, if I was looking at something like, I wouldn't get any sedan at that price. I would get whatever the best wagon I could get at that, because it would do all my daily work, and then I would also have just space to put things in the back.
So yeah, would you do that, or I mean, they're probably on the same platform. Would you do that, or a Panamera? Is it the Gran Turismo? Is that what we call that?
Yeah. Ooh, it's a tough. Those are kind of my two.
Yeah.
I'd go head to head on both of them and see which one I like better. I would say I like the looks on the Porsche a little bit more, but I think I might like I kind of like the idea there's nothing. Well, I don't know. That's a tough one.
The Audi 2 is instantly recognizable. There's only one RS6 Avant.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, when I'm buying the Audi, I feel like I'm buying all the other previous badass station wagons that they've made, which I've loved. But no, actually, that Panamera might be the one.
Yeah, the problem with the Panamera, and this is sort of the Panamera it's always been the hit, right? Like you can. When did the Panamera come out? What was the first year of the Panamera? Like 2009? I have no idea.
Something like that. I think in the 2000s.
And to the average person on the street, 2009, let's be honest, looks just like a 2020 or whatever, you know, 2021.
Yeah, it's been updated. There's definitely a different model from them.
But they look
a lot alike. You're right.
They really do. They really do. And you could find a sub $20,000 early Panamera, I would think. So, interesting. What else is going on? Or should we wrap this up?
I think for now, we wrapped this up.
We were excited to talk about the Polestar and wanted to, I guess we would do an episode anyway. So final verdict. I made a Doug Llewellyn reference the other day, and I don't think you picked up on it. Please tell me, I wanted you to tell me you grew up watching The People's Court, and that's what's inspired you to a life of.
I did see People's Court.
But do you remember Doug Llewellyn? He's the one that would come on and give the disclaimer about, you know.
I know who you're talking about now.
Both parties have agreed to dismiss their court cases and have their disputes settled here in our forum.
Now that you say that, I know who you're talking about.
Okay, all right.
I didn't know.
He died the other day.
I couldn't tell you the name.
He died the other day. But I thought for sure.
Well,
it has nothing to do with anything, listeners. I dropped. And you share the name. Come on. You're like two peas in a pod. You and Doug Llewellyn. I don't think he was an actual lawyer. I think he was just a talking head, but
yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of those shows are not. I mean,
it's been on in years, right?
Or well, at least it's
Judge Wapner version.
It's not an actual court; it's mediation.
That's why Doug Llewellyn had to come out there and break it down for you.
It's arbitration, is what those things were.
Right.
So it's and some of those shows, like I think Judge Judy is an actual judge and an attorney. But I'm not sure Judge Wapner was.
He was. He was, I think, in L.A. We'll look this up.
We'll verify this. But
even Judge Judy, the TV show, she's not a judge. I mean, she may do that or may be, you know, whatever, but that's just a TV show. That's just entertainment. That's got to be arbitration too.
But it's the same thing, though. Yeah. It's the same thing as People's Court. Yeah, it's a later, but
it was innocence to the People's Court.
It's also arbitration.
You know, people would sue for like $60 on the People's Court. You broke my cuckoo clock or whatever, you know?
So, yeah.
All right, we should wrap this up. We're going way too far into the weeds. But all right, we'll be back next week. What are we going to talk about next week? Probably the snow and.
Probably how much snow we have.
We'll find probably something. Not a lot of sports car driving before the next episode.
But we'll find something to talk about.
Yeah, we want to. We've got lots of stuff to talk about. We've got to talk a little bit about the automobile rally that's coming up too. We just heard word that that's happening again. So, Doug, until next week.
Yeah. Until next week.
I bid you later.
do you remember how they ended the People's Court?
Oh, I think that was, I don't know. I think there was some bum, 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 bum. And then we'll add the sound. Moved on to the Folgers commercial.
All right.
Until next week.
Until next week.